How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Did you enjoy lunch?
Yes.
Did you enjoy what went on during before lunch to actually bring you lunch? Did you notice that we cannot do anything just kind of easy around here? Like that's the way that we're actually going to bring lunch to you? Isn't that crazy? Well, thank you guys so much for being here today. We really appreciate you being at this breakout for developing a small group strategy. But before we even get started, I really just wanted to thank you for being here and taking out of your time. We know that you guys have a lot of work to do during the week to prepare for the weekends and to prepare for your ministry. And so it means a lot that you'd actually take out from your week or actually rather add to your week by being here, because we know that that work still has to be done. So thank you for doing that. We really appreciate it. My name's Cliff, and like many of our staff members here at our churches, I have a couple of different roles at our church. First, I'm the director of adult ministry environments at Gwinnett Church, which is our newest campus, about 20 miles northeast of where we are today. And in that role, that basically makes me responsible for anything that we do for adults outside of our Sunday service. The other thing that I do is I'm also responsible for a cross-campus part of what we do, where I'm the director or the North Point Ministries director of assimilation. And that just means that I help to drive cohesiveness in the processes and the functions that help connect people into small groups at our churches. But that's what I do for my work, but that really doesn't really do justice to explaining why I'm really passionate and really excited about the topic that we're talking about today. See, I am honestly one of those self-proclaimed group nuts, and there's probably many of you that are that same way here today, but I truly am. My wife, Tracy, and I have been married for 22 years, and we've got two kids. I've got a 17-year-old daughter, her name's Kirsten, and I've got a 15-year-old son, his name's Trey. And I haven't always been, though, that crazy groups guy. I was probably more the stereotypical guy. Back in 1995, Tracy first asked me, she was like, hey, we just started going to church together. Can we get in a small group? And I'm looking at her going, why? Like, why would you want to do that? Like, I have enough friends, and why would I want to go over to these people's house that I don't know and talk to them? Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Well, as you might imagine, she won out, because if not, that really wouldn't make any sense. I wouldn't be here. But we started to get involved in small groups, and maybe like a lot of you, I started to realize pretty quickly that I was growing more in my relationship with Jesus in those environments and those interactions that I was having in small group than really any other things we were doing at the church. And so that really impacted us, and our lives became kind of revolving around church and what we did in small groups, so much to the point that I would eventually leave a 14-year career as a management consultant to come on staff at our churches. But my old job in consulting is really the other reason why I really like the topic that we're talking about today. See, I'm all about purpose and strategy and asking questions to try to understand why things work the way they do and why great systems are functioning well and why systems that maybe aren't quite doing what we would hope that they would do, like what maybe is going on with that and can we figure that out together? And so you kind of combine this idea of groups and strategy and I'm kind of right at home in this topic. And so I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I do. But in order for us to get started, I actually wanted to just ask you to think about a question for me. If you were to go back 5, 10, 15 years, if you were to go back in time, what would you tell yourself then that you know now? What would you tell yourself? I think it's a pretty good question, and maybe it's something that you've already thought about. You've probably heard it asked a lot, and I did a lot of research on the internet on this question just to kind of see what people were saying. That's dangerous. Be careful with that. You don't know what kind of answers you're going to get back. Here's some of the answers, though. I found some really common answers that I liked, some really good answers, at least the ones that I can share with you. But a couple of them that I really appreciated, the first one was simply just be more grateful. If I could go back 10 or 15 years and tell myself to do something that I know better now, I just would tell myself to be more grateful. Another one that I really appreciated was save more money. Save more money. That thing that you think you need, you really don't need. In fact, you're just going to forget about it. It's going to go in a closet or in an attic some point in time. And then another one that I think is really simple, but is worth mentioning, is just to treat people well. The people in your life are so much more valuable than you think that they are, so just treat them well. It'll be good for you. But I also found some fun answers that I kind of liked. I hope you'll like as well. One of them was trust your parents. If any of you are like me and you have teenage kids, I'd love for them to go about 10 years in the future right now and to finally realize that when they're 25, that Tracy and I are just not complete idiots. Like, wouldn't that be awesome? I know that's what happened to me when I was 25. It was like, oh, my dad told me that. Makes sense. Makes sense. Another one, stay in school. I think that's always pretty good advice. You know, it's harder to go back later, so stay in school. And then as the father of a 17-year-old daughter, this one's my favorite. Don't date him, right? Don't date him or her if you've got a son. But actually, I really appreciate my daughter's boyfriend, so am I allowed to say that? I don't know if I can say that, but. Well, those are some fun answers. Those are some kind of fun ideas, but this question, in all seriousness, it's part of what I thought about as we were putting together this material and we were developing this talk, because what I thought about this topic was, if we could go back in time and tell even our churches 5, 10, 15 years ago what it would be like to start a small groups ministry, what would we tell them? What are the questions that we would ask them to think about? And so that's really what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about some questions that, if we really could go back in time and restart our small groups ministry, what are the things that we would ask ourselves to really give ourselves a better idea of what we're doing? But you can already guess that if that's the case, that means we didn't follow this process that I'm about to take you through when we started our church 19 years ago. We weren't that smart. We didn't have it all together, and what we've learned over the years really came with a cost, as it usually does. And we've made a lot of mistakes, but you know, where we are, and we just want to share that with you. So now that we have that context, you can open up into your books. We're going to be on page 27 of your regroup guide if you want to take notes and follow along with the outline. But we're just in Roman numeral 1. We're going to start right there in context for developing a small group strategy. See, we have a pretty clear way of doing ministry around here at our churches. It's not the way, it's not the right way, but we happen to think it's pretty clear. But there's a lot of great programs, there's a lot of great ministry environments out there. We hear about them a lot, we observe other people doing just great, amazing things. And that's awesome, but they all come with kind of different perspectives. So all these many different ways you can do small groups can be great, great ways if it really fits your context. But what we usually find out, and this happens for us too, I don't know if it happens for you guys, but it certainly happens for us. We see something out there and it's really great and it's getting fabulous results for another church or another organization. We say, well, wow, we should try that. And then we go and try it. And then for some reason, we don't get the same results. We don't necessarily get what we were hoping to get or what we were looking for out of something. But I think that's usually become because we just don't operate within the same context as maybe that other church or that other organization and really what they're coming from. Whoa. Are you okay?
We're good. That'll wake you up.
All right. Well, sorry about that. Are you fine?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so what we want to do in those cases is we really want to put together for ourselves kind of a grid or a list of questions or some things that we can ask ourselves to really understand our context for our ministry. This way, next time you come up with a great idea or a new program or you see something happen somewhere else, you can ask yourself some questions about your own ministry to see if that idea really is good for you or good for what you want to do and what you want to accomplish within your church context. So that's going to be kind of your homework that you take back from here. There was a piece of paper on your chairs, and that's your homework that you're going to take away with you. It's an outline of what we're going to talk about today, but even more importantly, in the blue column that's over to the far right, that's something that we really hope that you would take away and you'd walk through with your teams back at your churches or at the organizations that you work at, and that you'd maybe work through these same exercises that we talk about today. And the cool thing about this is the questions and the ideas that we're going to talk through, they're scalable. Your goals may be completely different than ours. Your church may be different than ours. The area, or the country, or the world in which you minister, it may look nothing like at Atlanta. So the culture that you live and work in may be very different. But these questions still apply. They're just answered differently. So that's what we hope that you'd really have to take away from this. But the important part is that you come up with the right answers to these questions for yourself and not really just the ones that we'll share with you. Okay, so in letter A in your outline, leading a small group is to developing a group strategy as driving a car is to building a car. Building is that blank. A car and a group strategy are both systems. Okay, show of hands. Trick question. How many of you can drive a car? Pretty much everybody, right? Okay, now leave your hands up if you could do some really serious work on that car and fix a bunch of stuff if I gave you unlimited access to an auto parts store. Anyone? A couple of them. Okay, a couple people. Well, as you can see, just like in small groups, everybody needs to know probably how to drive a car, but not everybody needs to know how to fix one. Well, in the same way, there's a lot of people who can lead a small group. There's a lot of people that can lead a small group, but not everybody needs to know how to develop a small group strategy, and that's okay. And even if you're that person at your church, even if that's your responsibility, you don't have to be the one that actually develops the strategy. You just need to make sure that you get it done. And so there's maybe other people on your church staff, or there's people that are volunteers in your ministry that can help you with that. And you usually know what kind of people those are, those folks that kind of think strategically. But if you're responsible for that, again, you just need to make sure that you end up getting it done. In letter B, every system is built of essential components. Now, I just literally sold a car this past Saturday. Car wasn't really working out too well for my family. I was about 12 years old. I was getting up there in miles and in age. And with my son having his learner's permit now, we have four drivers in my family. And this car had no power steering. And so, as you might imagine, I was really the only one that really felt comfortable driving this car. And so there was a component of the car that just didn't work. And so it wasn't as valuable to my family as we'd like it to be. And so just in that same way, there's essential components to a small groups ministry. There's essential components that you need to pay attention to in your small groups ministry. And if one of those isn't addressed or isn't working how you'd like it to, you'll get to a point where your small groups ministry isn't functioning the way you want it to. And so those are things that we're going to look at as we talk through today. And the goal for today, though, in letter C, is to further your ability to develop and implement an effective group strategy based on your context. An effective group strategy based on your context. So what we're going to do is we're going to introduce to you five components, we believe essential components to a small groups ministry, and then we're going to illustrate an expression of each of those components, what we do at our churches. But again, it's not the right answer, it's not the answer, it's just an example. But again, the thing that you guys need to do is you need to go figure out what it really looks like to have those answers for yourself. And so in Roman numeral 2, we have the five components of an effective small group strategy. And the first one in letter A is a guiding purpose. And I'd probably argue that this is probably the most important one that you need to start with. It'll certainly drive out what the answers to the other questions and to what are the other components that you'll be looking at. And so what we've done is we've created two steering questions for you for this particular component. The first one is, why does our church even have a small groups ministry? May sound kind of funny. But then the second one is, how is our group strategy helping us accomplish our mission? Now, I mentioned before that I used to be a consultant, and one of the things I used to really enjoy is starting a new project or starting some new work with a new company. And I always used to be amazed because I'd sit down with whoever was responsible for that work at that company, and I'd start to ask them questions about why they even asked us to join them, why they even hired us, or why they even wanted to take on this new initiative. And a lot of times it would kind of catch them off guard because they were like, wow, I thought you guys just wanted to get paid and do some work here. But what we often found out together is that we would start talking about things and really unearth some things within their company that really pointed us to why they wanted to do a specific project. And we'd learn a lot from that, because what we'd do is we'd uncover kind of what were really our goals and what the results we were hoping for within the project or the business that we were working with. Well, in the same way, your church and your small groups ministries work the same way. And so, as odd as it may sound, you really do need to ask yourself, why does our church even want a small groups ministry? And that answer can differ pretty widely. You can have a lot of different but very good answers to that question. You just need to figure out what works best for you, because it's going to really serve as your true north, and it's going to help guide the answers to the rest of the questions that we're going to talk about for the rest of the time together today. Now, there's a few years ago, there was an author, his name's Simon Sinek, and he wrote this book called Start With Why. I think actually he did an even better TED Talk. You can just kind of skip to that. But his premise and the whole idea was that all organizations can pretty much tell you what they do. Everybody can pretty much tell you what they do. Some organizations or some leaders can even tell you how they do it. But only the greatest of organizations and only the best leaders can tell you why they do it. And the best of the best actually start with why. And that's the first thing they'll tell you about what they try to go accomplish or about their goals. And so your small group strategy really works the same way. Now, our answer to these questions, I'll give you our answer to both the questions. The first one, as far as why does our church have a small groups ministry? For us, it's actually pretty simple. You've probably heard it a couple of times already today from Bill and from Andy, but we believe that in order to grow spiritually, you need to be connected relationally. That's it. That's why we have a small groups ministry. Sounds simple, but it's very true about what we believe. We believe that without intentional relationships, we just believe our spiritual growth is just limited. We can't do this in isolation, and we were never meant to do this in isolation. So that's why we have a small groups ministry. And it serves as the cornerstone for every environment, for every age person that comes to our church. And so even if you were to visit our preschool environments, our Wombaland environments, as soon as children are old enough to be in small groups and to actually interact with each other, we have them in small groups. And that continues on all the way up through high school. They're always in small groups when they're within an environment within our church. And then that's also why we encourage adults week in and week out. And you heard Andy talking about how much we do that from stage, but that's why we encourage adults to be in small groups also. But for us, with related to the second question, how does that group strategy help us accomplish our mission? Well, our mission is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. And if we believe a growing relationship has to be done in the context of relationships with other people, then the two just fit together hand in glove for us. It's just why we do groups and how it helps accomplish our mission at our church. But that's our answer. Doesn't have to be yours. Your answer for this question could simply be because we want to make a big church small. That's a good answer. And we believe it's true. It just doesn't happen to be our answer to this question. But again, the important part for you is that you guys figure out your answer to this specific question. So our guiding principle in this one, our particular guiding principle is in order to grow spiritually, you need to be connected relationally. You heard me say it before, but that's how we really guide things. That's really what we take away from this. And if you walk away with nothing more from this entire talk, this is the first question that you'll want to concentrate on. And don't be surprised if it actually takes a lot more time than you would think to really get in and really uncover what's true of your church. And it doesn't matter, honestly, what you want to be true, but what's really true of your church. Because if you can latch onto that, your group's ministry really will be all that it can be in the context of how you minister. So the second component, we're going to move on to letter B. The second component is point leadership. And the steering question is, who is empowered, responsible, and accountable for the success of our group systems? So for the success of our group system, there needs to be someone on your staff, or maybe it's a volunteer, who has been empowered and is made responsible for your group's ministry at your church. And it's really important that that person be a great leader and that they have some great skills and some great things that they bring to the table as far as what they can do within your organization. But even more important than their leadership and their skills, there's something that needs to be important about this person. And that's that their life needs to really have been marked by relational ministry. It needs to be the kind of person that even if you took them out of that job, they would still be in small groups. And they would still be encouraging other people to be in small groups because small groups or some form of relational ministry has made such a deep impact in their life that they don't want to do anything else. That's really what they want to do. So yeah, that person does. They need to be a great leader and they need to have other skills, but that really needs to be true to them or true of them. Well, you guys met Bill Willits before. He's our answer to that question. And Bill's a wonderful guy. And for those of us that know him really well, we understand that relationships are incredibly important to him. They really are. He believes with every bit of his being that there's no way that this happens without each other. There's no way that this happens in isolation. That never really goes well. And so even if Andy had not asked Bill years ago to run our small groups ministry, to be in charge of everything we do for adults, Bill would still be in groups. And Bill would still be encouraging other people to be in groups. And even as we sit under Bill's leadership, we have community in and of itself of that because he values it so much. And so for your organization, it could be you. It could be another person on your staff, but you really need to optimally find that person that is that great leader, but has also been impacted by small groups or relational ministry in some way in order to really get out of this what you're probably hoping for. Our guiding principle in this is first who, then what? First who, then what? That came from an author, his name's Jim Collins, wrote a great book called Good to Great. And we just want to find the right person before we really decide what to do with that specific thing. Okay, so the third component to our small group strategy is leader development. And we're going to borrow another idea from Jim Collins in this sense. Jim has this idea that any system, and small groups ministry is a system, but any system has a fuel to it or a thing that keeps its engine running. And we believe that, at least within our context, the fuel that keeps our small group engine running is more and better equipped leaders. And so that's something that we concentrate on a lot at our churches. And two of our essential components actually have to do with leaders. This is the first one in leader development. And our first steering question for you guys is, what information and skills are important to leading well? What do leaders need to know to do their job well? What do they need to understand about the groups that you're willing or that you're asking them to facilitate? What are you hoping happens in their groups? But the first thing you need to determine, though, is what do they need to know? And so our answer to this question, we kind of try to simplify this as much as we can. We know that there will always be more things that we would want to share with leaders than time that we have to share them. And if you guys have been in small groups plenty of times, then you know that every single group that you're in is always different because it's filled with different people. And so the number of different things that can happen is kind of infinite. And so you can never tell a group leader, hey, here's every single thing you need to know, because there's always going to be something new. And so what we've tried to do is we've tried to kind of boil it down to what we call 8 leader essentials. And I've listed them on the board here. The purpose of our time is not necessarily to go through these. If you want to write down one thing off this entire slide, it's that URL at the bottom, that tinyurl.com/group-LDR. If you go there, there's actually a PDF with all of these leader essentials and explanations for each and some descriptors behind them of what we're kind of looking at and what we're thinking about when we talk to leaders about this material. The important part for us, though, in this is that we're really hoping in these cases that the leaders are able to concentrate on something that's digestible for them. They can always come back to these 8 leader essentials. Everything that we teach leaders will usually boil up to one of these, and so we can help keep them focused in that way. In that same way, the leaders can look at these, and they can kind of look at these essentials as gauges, and if their group's going well, they can kind of see that they're hitting on all cylinders. But if something's going on in their group and they're not quite sure what's happening or what the challenge that they're experiencing is, they can look back at these essentials and they can kind of go, well, wow, I'm doing 2 and 3 really, really well, but I'm really not doing well in some other area. And it just gives them ideas and things to address and things to think about with regard to the health of their group. But again, we kind of get back to the point that there never would be a chance for us to share everything that we could possibly share with leaders. We've got to kind of boil it down. And so our guiding principle in this is to simply teach less for more. Okay, teach less for more. That's what we've decided to do here, because we know that adults certainly can't take in everything that there possibly is to know about leading a small group. The fourth component that we'll talk about today is our coaching structure. Okay, it's our coaching structure. And the steering question is, how are we delivering information and skills to group leaders? How are we delivering that information? So first we talked about, well, what are we actually sharing with them? And now we're going to talk about how are we going to actually do that. These kind of two go hand in glove. Once you figure out what you want to share, it's probably going to give you some ideas of how to share it. Or if you come up with a great way that you want to use to share information with your leaders, it might drive what you share with them. So you'll just have to work with these two a little bit together along the way. But our answer to this question really comes down to a simple idea that in much of our training, virtually all of our training is done with leaders face-to-face in a one-on-one meeting. Okay, Andy talked about this idea before that we have groups directors on our staff. I was a groups director for about 4 years when I started at our churches, and the primary responsibility for a group director is literally to meet with leaders and to help them with their groups. It's their primary job. Andy commented that we used to use kind of a volunteer coaching structure, and that worked really well for us for a while. It really did. And so there's nothing wrong with that. You guys may be in that sort of situation also, but what we felt over time is when we could move to sort of a different structure where we can invest differently in our group leaders, we took that chance and we went that direction. And that really did a couple of things for us. One of the first things that it did is it actually put every group leader face to face with a pastor on our staff that, like I said before, their primary responsibility is simply to help them with their groups. So at any point in time, there's no group leader, hopefully at our church, that thinks that they're kind of doing small groups ministry on their own out on an island. Even though they're not at the church when they host their group or when they facilitate their group, they're still supported by the church, and we kind of have their backs in what they're doing. Another thing that it did for us, though, is it allowed us to actually model for them what we hope that they experience in their groups. So we take time and we really develop relationships with our group leaders. We get to know them. We get to know their families. We try to understand what's going on in their lives as much as we possibly can. And this way, when we're meeting time and time again, they learn to trust us. And they learn to we have great conversations together. One other thing, though, that was extremely important to us, and this is kind of the tip of how we deliver our information to our group leaders, it allowed us to concentrate with the leader on what was important to them at any point in time. So when I was a groups director and I was meeting with one leader, I could go from a lunch with one leader and talk about one of those 8 essentials with them that really mattered for their group because of what they were going through. And then I could go to a next meeting, I can go to a coffee in the afternoon and talk with another leader about a completely different topic because it was really important to them. It's one of the things we found out along the way. We still do some larger training environments, but we found that when we just do large training environments and that's all we do, we end up kind of scattering our information amongst a bunch of folks. And we believe, though, that our adults kind of learn on a need-to-know basis. We learn best what's most important to us because of what's going on in our lives. And this delivery mechanism of meeting with leaders in a one-on-one environment allowed us to do that. It allowed us to just be flexible and really meet the needs of our leaders where they were and when they were. So our guiding principle in how we do this in number 3 is simply that coached leaders go further faster. And when we can truly coach them and be a pastor to them, then that helps set their group experience up better for what they want to accomplish in their groups also. Okay, the last component of our successful small group strategy is a connection solution. It's a connection solution, and the steering question is, how are we forming groups? How are we gonna form groups within our groups ministry? And for us, we look at forming groups not simply as this idea of getting people that are out of group into group. See, the people that aren't in small groups to us, they're not just in one category. There are some people that are not in small group that they just need one small extra push. They need us to help us remove one barrier for them. Maybe they just need us to help them meet some other people who want to be in small group, and they're ready. They already value small groups. They already want to be a part of them. They just need one little extra push. But then there's another group of people, and you guys know who I'm talking about. There's other folks, they're not even decided that group's a great idea. Remember, I was that guy when my wife asked me back in 95, hey, do you want to get in a small group? I'm like, why? Again, I just didn't get it. And so we try to do different things for those people. But what we're trying to do all along the way is when we're forming groups, a lot of what's going on in our culture and in our churches is not only just how are we putting a group together at the end, but how are we leading people in steps towards groups? How are we building in them this sense over time that group's really valuable? You really want to be a part of this. It's not like the preschoolers. It's not like the kids in elementary. We just can't say, well, you're in a group now. Adults have a choice in that. And so we're trying to lead them closer and closer and closer to forming groups along the way. So our answer looks like a couple of different things in our context. Right now, the primary way that we address those people that are ready to get in group, they've already decided, yeah, I'm ready to jump in, is an event. Andy mentioned it a little while ago. It's called Group Link. We host it twice a year at each one of our churches, And it gives people an opportunity to come meet other people who are in the same stage of life, maybe the same area of town. They can get together and they can figure out how to form a group. It actually works really, really well. But those are the people that are ready for group. So what about the people that aren't quite ready? One of the other many things we do is we've developed a system of short-term group environments. All of our community groups meet for between a year and two, and that's quite a bit of commitment for a lot of people. And so some of those people who they're not quite ready yet, they might want to study a specific topic. They might give us 6 or 8 weeks on something. And I would have been in that perfect situation if Tracy had come to me and said, hey, just come for 6 weeks. I'd be like, okay, maybe I'll do that. Right? That seems digestible. And so people can come for 6 to 8 weeks. They can see if they like the experience. And then after that, they can jump in a long-term group. But again, that's just because of the way we're thinking about this of how are we moving people on a continuum closer and closer to small group. Because the guiding principle for us in this whole idea is to think steps, not programs. To us, GroupLink is not a program. It just may be the last step that someone takes to get into a long-term group. But what are the other steps along the way where you can make it, that you can introduce, that you can make it easy for people to get into groups in your church or in your ministry? So as we wrap up here today, I want to kind of move into a conclusion, an idea of what we covered and what we talked about. But just to kind of wrap up, the first idea is that no one small group strategy will work for everyone. There's no silver bullet out there. So don't adopt our strategy. Don't just adopt someone else's. There's a lot of ways that this can work. And if you ask yourself these questions, and if you take the time, and it will take some time, to kind of pull this back and figure out what's really valuable to your church and the people that you guys serve, then you'll figure out a great way to do groups in your context. And then number two, though, each strategy will only be as strong as its weakest component. It's kind of like my car with no power steering. Wasn't working for 3/4 of my family. In the same way, you have to address each and every aspect, all the essential components that we've talked about today, if you want your group's ministry really to kind of run smoothly and to get all of everything out of it that you can. Number three, every strategy may not be infinitely scalable, but the questions are. This is really good news because your context is going to change over time. The people coming to your church are going to change. We all know that culture is going to change over time. And the good news is that even your answers to these questions can change as the environment around you changes. Those things can change, and you can have different answers over time. We've done that. Our answers, and I've even told you some of them, our answers have changed as we've kind of evolved. And then that makes this last part really important, though. And number four, you need to ask and answer these questions continuously. If you come back as things change and you continually revisit these questions, you'll see how the people that you're serving, how their needs have changed, and where you might need to change to do things differently also.